Hello, and welcome to the Movie Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting a movie that we think you'll find interesting. In this episode, I'm joined by my sister, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on Top Gun Maverick from 2022. It was the sequel that took, what, 30-some-odd years to make? 36, I think?
That sounds about right.
And it's funny, because as we were starting to watch the film, you know, it starts with the same explanation of what Top Gun is. The Top Gun was a little fancier, and then it puts in Maverick. But even other than that, for the next minute or two, as we're seeing footage of the aircraft carrier and all those things, I could have thought we were watching the original movie.
Yeah.
And I knew going in, it was going to be dealing with Goose's son and some of that. I figured Maverick was going to be in the instructor role. So it was going to be a mishmash of going down the same sort of path and reversing a few things.
We discussed beforehand, Tom Cruise is not the actor you put in the Viper position, which is mostly behind the desk, occasionally in the airplane. You're more likely to put him in the Jester position of out in the airplane almost every day.
So instead of Tom Skerritt's role, it was the Michael Ironside role, essentially.
Yes.
And they pretty much blended the two here.
I'd say, well, no, because we still had John Hamm's Cyclone, who was the guy behind the desk. And the guy who, when he tried to basically demote Maverick, took over training, or wanted to.
Yeah. Well, and we also had the guy who was on the last ship.
Charles Parnell.
Who did a great job.
And he really
was
did.
Kind of. It's funny, those two guys were kind of the current day equivalent of Viper and Jester from the original film. They just had to have Maverick come in as the special instructor.
Well, and this was not your regular Top Gun class.
No. The big change they made to the film was introducing the mission.
Mm-hmm.
They've got the best of the best of the pilots coming in. They've got a particular mission that's going to be damn near impossible to do. So not only do they need the best of the best, but they got to weed that down to the ones who are actually going to be on the strike team or whatever. And they need to be specifically trained for the specific mission.
Yeah.
And of course, Maverick was picked for a handful of reasons, a lot of which being Iceman, Val Kilmer's character, is now in charge of the Pacific Fleet because he's actually gone up the ranks in the intervening time.
Go figure.
And he picks Maverick as much because he knows Maverick can do it as Maverick needs it too. You know what I mean? Val Kilmer's role in this was small, but well used, well done.
I would agree with that.
I thought it was a good way to handle all of that.
Well, and they made his role feel like more than it was through the use of text messages and photographs.
Text messages, photographs, referencing. It was clear he had become a big deal.
Yeah.
So I do think there was a point in the script after which his character dies and Ice gets mentioned for like a scene or two after that and then poof, gone.
Mm-hmm. The guy who was guarding your back is gone. It's now open season on you.
Yeah, there is no safety net for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were here because of him. He's no longer here. So you don't need to be here, Maverick.
Yeah.
And of course, Maverick being a very apt call sign, he basically borrows a jet for the second time in the film. And again, this was set up in the opening stuff where it's like, okay, let's prove the mission can be done.
But in the opening sequence, when he borrows a jet, he's given this decision point, and it's pointed out to him, you know what happens to you if you do this. And his response is along the lines of, I know what happens to the rest of you if I don't.
Yeah, it was a very selfless thing he was doing.
Yeah.
And it shows growth in the character.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. He knows he risks demotion, etc., if he does it, but he knows the project gets shut down if he doesn't.
Yeah.
And that's a lot more people riding on the action in a positive way.
Well, and likewise, when he's proving the mission can be run, he's doing it because he knows if he doesn't, the parameters are going to change. It's going to put the team in jeopardy.
Yeah.
And make it almost impossible for them to come out alive. Because it was very clear that the guy he was answerable to who took over the training, his goals were to get the mission done.
Yes.
The get the guys home safely was not on his list.
Yeah.
Where it was very clearly on Maverick's.
Yeah.
So I think the addition of the mission to do put a little bit of a different spin on the training and stuff, gave it a bit more of a time pressure thing. So it was only 2 or 3 weeks versus 8 weeks in the original. And it really set up kind of the big action stuff at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Of it's all building to this. We can set everything up versus, you know, in the first, they just all happen to go back to the same ship Maverick and Goose had been on, happened to bump into a couple of MiGs, happened to have to do some stuff. And it played great in the original.
Yeah.
But this gave it a bit more intentionality here.
Well, and in the original, the training was all over the board because we're trying to train you to be the best of the best at everything.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this was much more mission specific.
Oh, very much so. Here's the slalom run you've got to do. You've got to stay below the radar in this valley and stuff. Then when you get to the end of it, you've got to shoot straight up over a mountain, back straight down, shoot the trench in the Death Star kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And two people have to do it in a row, one to set it up, the other to make the actual shot.
Yeah, one to open the door, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, and the slalom run was very Star Wars to me also.
Yes, particularly when you have the missiles above and stuff like that. Yeah. They're not getting shot at in there, but there is, you're right, there's definitely an aspect of the mission that you swap out the modern day fighter jets for X-Wings, and it may as well be the run on the Death Star.
Yeah.
So, and it wasn't bad in terms of, oh, is it original or whatever. It all made sense why the thing was such a hard thing to get to because of what they were trying to do. I mean, it's not like the defenses on the base were out of nowhere.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed that. I loved the footage where as the jets are taking off to go do the mission and the ship launches all of the missile strikes.
The Tomahawks.
The Tomahawks for the airfield.
Yeah, and they go up over the planes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What they can film today versus what they could film during the original, radically different.
Yeah.
There was nothing I think they couldn't do today that they had wanted to, as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was just some great footage. It was nice seeing them just pulverize the defensive airfield. And then, of course, that comes back as to the, but we need to steal a jet and fly off this thing.
Yeah.
So.
But it also gave a good reason why they knew where an airfield was and what aircrafts were at the airfield.
Yes. Yes. Well, and the arc between Rooster, Goose's son, mm-hmm. and Maverick follows the same line, but almost in reverse in terms of Maverick and Goose were together up until a certain point. Goose is gone. In this, Maverick and Rooster were, I don't want to say at odds, but apart.
Yeah.
And then come together at the end.
Well, they had a definite misunderstanding from Maverick's perspective that was holding them apart.
I don't know if it was, I wouldn't phrase it as a misunderstanding. It was a, Maverick had information that he was and is withholding in terms of why he pulled Rooster's application to the Naval Academy and stuff like that. And it came out, obviously, in some exposition, but it all made sense when it did, how it did.
Mm-hmm.
And they had some nice echoes towards the original film. They used some of the footage.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole bit when Rooster's doing the Great Balls of Fire and we see the footage from the original on his dad doing that.
Yeah.
That played well. And
there were a lot of scenes, especially early in the film, that felt like a mirror to scenes from the original film.
Well, I would say throughout the entire film, there were a few where the order of the scenes were a little different. In place of the volleyball, we had the beach football.
Yeah.
We had, he's riding the motorcycle by the airstrip.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of those things.
We had the night before class at the bar.
Oh, yes. And it played out kind of as a reversal. This time, he's the instructor they don't know.
Yeah.
So, I think it would be fun for somebody to edit the two movies with Top Gun on top, Top Gun Maverick below it, and reorder one of the two to match the other.
Mm-hmm.
because there were so many things where, okay, we've got the love scene. He's got, I'm trying to think of some of the other ones that were just dead on the money. I mean, the
going to visit the Admiral at his house.
Visiting the Admiral at the house, the funeral.
Yeah.
They hit a lot of the same notes in different ways.
Yeah.
So it's not like, geez, I've seen this film. But it was almost a, let's do the same film, let's add the mission in and just repaint a little.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in a bad way, because I've seen some sequels where it's, you're hitting the same notes in the same order and there's nothing new. Here, the character dynamics were different enough, but there were also some that were similar enough.
Yes.
I mean, all the way down to Rooster and Hangman.
Yes.
Shaking hands at the end, just like Iceman and Maverick did.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a lot of those things, again, almost shot for shot. So if they had not added in the mission aspect, it would have been very much the same movie as the first.
Mm-hmm.
And going in, I was a little worried that was going to be the case. Because when you do a sequel, either you're going to go around the same lap again and maybe not cover any new ground, but hey, the first was popular, so let's do it again.
Yeah.
Or you're going to take things and do the, well, boy chases girl, now it's girl chases boy kind of reversals or something.
Mm-hmm.
Or like in the MASH TV show, they got rid of one commanding officer with another. One was at home in the army and not in the hospital room. The other was at home in the hospital, but not in the army.
Yeah.
So same narrative position, but kind of flip-flop an aspect.
Yeah.
So I knew the, I don't even say the risk of that, the reality of that being likely was, you know, through the roof. But even when we were getting Maverick training him and just play shooting them down during the training and stuff,
mm-hmm.
which is so similar to Jester having gone up with them in the original.
Yeah.
It still played differently.
Well, and when Maverick is basically calling one of them out with the, oh, abandoning your wingman kind of thing of, you know, haven't seen that in a while.
Yeah, yeah, because he did that, you know.
Yeah.
It's funny because Hangman was a mishmash of Iceman and Maverick.
Yes.
He had almost the ego of Iceman and some of the skills and mindset of Maverick.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And again, same puzzle pieces, just put them together a little differently.
I liked the lady pilot, Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
I liked how they played her. The one who had some understanding of where Rooster was coming from without knowing the backstory.
Yeah.
But who was able to size people up and kind of realize, okay, I need you on my team.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't get your act together, we're stuck with him. So I need to help you get through whatever you're hitting.
Yeah. Well, and I like there was a team aspect to this very blatantly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was missing in the original and not only played really well in the end and stuff, but again, the using that as justification for the beach football.
That was funny.
Where they were playing both offense and defense at the same time, apparently.
Yes, yes.
And I love how commanding officer, it's like, well, why are you doing this? You don't have time for it. It's like, you wanted a team. This is a team thing. And the guy just kind of looks at it and begrudgingly says, okay, and walks off.
Yeah.
John Hand's character, he was definitely anti-Maverick,
mm-hmm.
but also willing to admit where what Maverick was doing was working.
Yes. He was just also quick to see where it wasn't working or wasn't working fast enough.
He wasn't going to give Maverick the leeway Maverick needed,
yeah.
particularly for this sort of a mission on this sort of a time frame, because he was also trying to balance his own career.
Yes. Yes.
There are ways you can, I mean, again, there was, I left at one point, it's like, okay, you've stolen a jet, it's no longer flyable because of the damage you did to it, which was part and parcel of what was going to happen in the mission. You proved it could be done, so now I've got to ask myself, do I replace you as the team's coach, do I put you in as team lead, or, you know, what do I do?
Yeah.
And I loved how
Charles Parnell's
character chimes in as Maverick's about to speak up. That was a rhetorical question.
Yes, yes. Well, and there was one point where it's John Hamm up against Tom Cruise in a conversation in the office, and Charles Parnell just hides a smile of, oh, wow, I should have seen that response coming.
Oh, yeah, when it's a, you want anything, I need it in writing, if you're going to change any mission parameters, whatever. And Maverick's like, does that include the hard floor? Yes, it does. And then he puts down the, and here's a written request to change that.
Yes, yes.
And I loved how when they're walking out, Charles Parnell's character, whose name I don't remember, basically turns to him. It's like, you know, it's all about timing, Maverick.
Yeah, you really gotta learn timing.
Yeah.
I loved the character Hondo.
Yes, yes. Because that was the guy from the beginning.
Yes.
That could have been a little clearer.
And it should have been clearer, yes, that he was from the beginning and that he somehow came with Maverick.
Yeah, because Maverick is there as the test pilot for next generation aircraft or whatever, trying to get it to go above Mach 10. They're about to get shut down because it's only gone, or that day's goal was to get it to Mach 9. He basically borrows the plane, gets it to 10.2?
Yeah.
And seems to have to bail out or whatever, but keeps the project alive. And then for Hondo to get kind of pulled into Top Gun as...
Well, in some ways, he was Goose to Maverick.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that is an aspect of the character I really liked. Maverick needed that guy who has his back.
Yes.
In this case, it was, okay, I'm up in the air. When I shoot them down, I send them down to the ground for Hondo to dish out the give me 20 push-ups so you feel dead, mm-hmm. which I just mm-hmm. thought was priceless.
Yeah. Well, and again, it made that sequence feel just enough different from the original.
Yes. Yes.
So I enjoyed this film. I think it was really good. Having just watched the other one a few nights ago, it's very obvious the parallels to me. If I had spaced them out by 3 decades plus, yeah. probably not so much. Where I think this one didn't measure up, because I don't want to say it fell down in this respect, although I kind of feel that way, was the soundtrack.
Oh, yeah.
Now, it opened up with the Top Gun anthem and stuff, as mm-hmm. would be expected. It's a Top Gun movie. You must do that. If not, you're an idiot. It cut over to Danger Zone by Kenny Loggins.
Mm-hmm.
Go-to choice, got it. Again, that's why the opening felt so much like am I watching the same film. But then some of the other music choices later were not bad, but they didn't have the resonance that I feel so many of the songs from the original had.
Well, they didn't give me the pulse-pounding feel during the dogfights mm-hmm. in the air and stuff.
Well, and even some of it of... Do you think 30 years, 35 years from now, we're going to remember some of these songs like Take My Breath Away and some of those other...
No.
Yeah. And again, they weren't bad songs.
Yeah.
But I don't feel they've got the staying power.
Neither the staying power nor the representative nature of a time period.
Yes.
And I get that more and more films are trying to be timeless, but...
Yeah, I think there's a way to be timeless and a way you're doing it wrong. I think getting it to where the technology does that, you know, is going to radically change over the decades. Okay. You don't want that to be too dated.
Yeah.
Okay. But you don't want music that is so in the moment.
Yeah.
That 6 months from now it's forgotten, but you want something that is, and it's impossible to necessarily predict what these are going to be, but representative of the era it's from.
Mm-hmm.
And again, Kenny Loggins did so many songs for so many movies and just other songs.
Yeah.
That is evocative of that era. It's hard to, again, pick who are those kinds of people going to be today. And I'm not even sure I felt like they tried.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So, and it may not have been big on their mind.
Well, they showed the Firetown USA hangar.
Yes.
Which means they went to, I guess it's Nevada to film. But they said this was taking place at North Island.
And yeah, in their mind, Top Gun is still in San Diego.
Yeah, and they identified San Diego as Firetown, USA.
Yes, yes. There's an aspect of... Well, it's funny because after watching movies, I'll often go to the IMDb page, look at the trivia, and they're like, oh, this is wrong. This is not the way it is. And I get that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think people lose sight of the fact that we live in our reality.
Mm-hmm.
Top Gun takes place in the Top Gun universe.
Yeah, that's true.
In the Top Gun universe, clearly, Top Gun never left San Diego. Boom, done. That's all there is to it.
And
it
yet,
is not an error. It was a choice they made.
Yes. And that's what I'm noticing. They made the choice.
Yes.
But they didn't return to filming locations they had used before, including some that conceivably would have been easier to use now that they're no longer on military bases.
Mm, yeah, yeah.
So I'm just intrigued by the choices they made.
I didn't really have any problem with any of that stuff, given, again, it's been 36 years. So I didn't feel they had to go back to the same bar or had to go back to anywhere in particular.
I was thinking more the training building.
I could even chalk that up to it's been long enough, it was rebuilt.
Okay.
If this were, hey, it's just a couple of weeks later, just a year or two or whatever, decades have elapsed.
Yeah, sadly true. And they've, even Tom Cruise acknowledged them. Maverick acknowledged them.
Yeah.
Begrudgingly.
And they sort of address this early on when he's getting dressed down by Ed Harris's character, his commanding officer at the time, or actually, no, the admiral of that was going to shut down the prototype plane of, you're getting sent to Top Gun, but you should have been a like two-star admiral by now if you'd kept going up, but you've been bounced down, you refuse to leave, you haven't been discharged. I mean, how have you stuck around this long and still be a captain?
Yes.
And it's, oh, what a nice little mysteries. I think that's the sort of thing Dad would have had a big problem with the film.
Yes.
Because typically in the military, it's move up or move out.
Yeah, exactly. There is actually, they have in the regulations, if you do not move up from this rank within this number of years, you're out.
I almost would have played that a little differently here in terms of Maverick knowing when you get to a certain level, you can no longer fly.
That's what I was thinking.
So get bounced down. However, you've got to space those things out, like getting bounced down and stuff, to where the people who are in the office that determine do you get promoted, do you not, have cycled out and they don't see you going back up for promotion for the same rank a second time.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I can't do this within a 4-year period or whatever it would be. If he had actually figured out how to game the system.
Yeah.
Because I think that would have been hilarious. And whether it could have really worked that way or not, I think there's a way they could have made it sound plausible.
Mm-hmm.
Every so many years, I've gone up this much, I must go down this much, but I can't do it too soon. I've got to, you know.
Well, it's like during Vietnam, they had some kind of points system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Again, him still being a captain after presumably 40 years in the Navy. Because you figure in the first movie, he had to have been in a good couple of years to be a pilot worthy of Top Gun.
Yeah.
It's 36 years later, ergo 40, so.
Yeah.
Again, I think they did a solid job with the cast, a good job on the writing.
Well, on the cast, Miles Teller, who is Rooster, I mean, he nails being Goose's son.
He does. He's not his father, but he's enough of his father.
Yeah, I was really impressed by that casting.
Well, and particularly when they do the opening bit at the bar, Maverick's just been thrown out of it, essentially, and Rooster's doing the Great Balls of Fire riff. And he does a great job with that, and Maverick having kind of the flashbacks to when he had been with his father, similar position, similar time, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And just also flipping in the, oh, and this is how Goose died, kicking in the PTSD kind of thing.
Yeah.
That was a great moment. And particularly when the love interest who owns the bar is looking out, it's like, something's going on there.
Yeah.
And again, she'd known him long enough because the implication is she's the daughter of the admiral that was mentioned in the first film right before the singing of Great Balls of Fire. Not that she would have known that.
Yeah.
But yeah, they had a good cast. There were one or two familiar faces in the cast that were literally blink and you miss them.
Yes.
Raymond Lee from the new Quantum Leap was in there as Yale, one of the pilots.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure he had a line or two of dialogue when he was getting shot down by Maverick.
Mm.
You know, fake shot down. But yeah, still. Yeah. And then one of the other ones was one of the regular cast members on The Good Place.
One of the pilots?
One of the pilots.
Interesting.
Manny Jacinto, who played Fritz. He was one of the six main cast members on The Good Place, which we need to go through at some point.
I
think that's a great show. So there are, again, a couple that are already familiar, but not in the core of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And again, when you've got a class of 12 and only six are going to get picked, and two of them are the Son of Goose and the Iceman equivalent of the time, you know?
Yeah.
They get a lot more of the story.
I think what they could have done better with the film is identifying for me if every plane had two people.
They made a comment that only a few of the planes had the second seat, and Bob was clearly one of the backseat guys.
Yeah. I thought it was like every pair had a single and a two-seater, maybe?
That's what I was thinking, too.
Yeah.
but they could have made that clearer, and I'm not entirely sure who was the backseat in the other one.
Yeah. Bob was the only backseater that I felt I got to know or identified consistently as a backseater.
Yes. Well, and part of it is he was introduced, Bob, what's your call sign, Bob?
Yeah, that was funny.
Yeah, it was. But then, oh, you're going to be my backseat.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, there's the pilot, there's the backseat, boom, got it. I almost wonder if they did that as a nod to the Maverick Goose relationship and how that played out. Because it seemed like they could have just as easily, if Goose had been one of the other pilots,
yeah,
it had been his wingman versus his backseat, I don't think we would have had any backseat people this time.
And that could definitely be.
So they leave the door open to the possibility of more Top Gun movies.
Yeah.
If they wanted to do this as a franchise, there's nothing that says Tom Cruise has to be in another one.
Mm-hmm.
But they would need to have something to more than just thematically connect it.
Yeah.
In other words, if they do a Top Gun jackpot or something, and Jackpot's the lead pilot or whatever, and there's no other than it's a Top Gun pilot connection to these films, that'd feel a little weird.
Mm-hmm.
But there is that option. I frankly would be a little surprised if they do that. And I don't see Tom Cruise necessarily going back to this. But, I mean, he hadn't for 36 years, so who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a hard call.
So, anything else?
Don't think so. There were a few things that came to mind while we were watching. I'm trying to think what they were.
I think if people like the original and haven't seen this, it's worth watching.
Yes, definitely.
I don't know that it's a beat the door down, you must watch kind of film either. But I certainly don't feel it's a waste of time.
Yeah.
And if you haven't watched the original recently, I would suggest doing what we did of we watched the original one night and then two nights later watched the sequel.
I think they were better as a pair, honestly.
Yeah. I think there were certain things in this that they give you what you need in a Top Gun Maverick of, oh, here's the Great Balls of Fire thing, here's the connection and stuff. But I think the first being the start of Maverick's real highlight of his career, whatever, and this being almost he's getting drummed out if he's not careful kind of a deal. Bookends everything nice. And because the other was so fresh, it's like, okay, they're getting me back into the narrative universe a little too well, you know, kind of a thing at the beginning.
Well, and in Top Gun Maverick, we see his growth as a character, but also how he uses what he learned to help others grow.
Yeah, yeah. He's clearly become a lot more of a team player than he was at the beginning.
I think he's a better mentor than he thought he was. You know, helping Rooster, who I don't want to say he's hampered by what happened to his father, but throughout the training, people are telling him go faster, this, that, and the other. And he's saying, at one point, he blatantly says, my father trusted Maverick implicitly.
I'm not going to make that mistake.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Maverick's best advice to him is stop thinking, just do.
Yeah.
Which, again, is so Maverick from the first film.
Yeah.
And I think this is a fine film on its own. It gains a lot from having just watched the original.
Well, and there's that great face-to-face when Maverick asks Rooster, what were you thinking? You told me not to think.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny because I don't know that there's anything exactly like that in the first film, but it is evocative of the Goose-Maverick relationship.
Yeah.
And the writers of the sequel not only were familiar with the first film, they understood the first film.
They drew the best out of it and built on top of that.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I highly respect.
I'm not going to say this is the best ever sequel, because I don't make hyperbolic statements of that sort. But I think if you're interested in how to do a sequel well,
yeah,
watching these two films is a good way to sort of understand that.
I would agree.
If you take a look at it, see where they stayed in parallel, where they went in opposition, what they did a little differently, and because, again, doing a good sequel, if it's too different, it's off-putting.
Mm-hmm.
If it's too similar, it's unoriginal.
Yeah.
And striking that balance, and I think they did a good job with that here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wish the soundtrack lived up to what I had expected based on the original.
Yeah.
Which is unrealistic.
Well, no, but Danger Zone is the only song in my head coming out of this.
Yeah. Well, again, some of the others, I mean, I hadn't thought about Take My Breath Away or whatever till we watched it again.
Yeah.
But the minute you strike those chords, you hear that, it's like, oh, yeah. there are so many songs that come out in any given year. Only a tiny fraction of them are going to have the, you hear a few bars, oh yeah, recognition.
Yeah.
And for different reasons. Some because they're just such good songs. Some because they resonate with you individually. Others because they were played to death on the radio.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember a point where you could not be out in any public venue that had music on in the background, you know, a fast food place, a mall, or, you know, wherever, without hearing Kokomo by the Beach Boys.
Yes.
Repeatedly that night, you know what I mean?
Yes, and blame Tom Cruise for that, too.
Cocktail?
Yes.
Yeah. I would have liked, near the end of this, he's basically dating the lady who owns the bar, and it's like, well, what are you going to do if you get out of the Navy? Oh, I could pour drinks. I've done that before.
Yeah.
Just a line like that would have been fun.
Yeah.
I mean, Tom Cruise is an enjoyable actor to watch. I'm not going to say he's a great actor. He's not a bad actor. But I do think it'd be fun to go watch some of his other films that we haven't seen in forever. Color of Money, Cocktail, Rain Man. I haven't seen, I don't know if I've ever fully seen Days of Thunder or Far and Away.
Mm. If I have, it was back around the time they came out.
Yeah. And he's done some great films. He's done some films that were also popular.
Yeah.
He's done some that were popular that were not also great. I mean, as much as I might enjoy him in Mission Impossible, I think it's a bad take on Mission Impossible from the get-go.
Yeah.
And they've gotten it worse over time, which amazes me. I didn't think that was possible.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm glad we watched. It was fun.
Me too.
So we're good?
Yeah.
Cool. Thanks for listening to this episode. If you liked this episode, please spread the word about the Comic Crew Page podcast by telling your friends and posting a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And please, join our Slack community and let us know what you thought of this episode. I do this podcast because I enjoy talking about comics. So let's talk about comics. The show notes, forum, and instructions for how to join our Slack channel can be found at www.comicbookpage.com. The opinions of the co-hosts and guests are their own. The Comic Book Page podcast is copyright John Mayo. And thanks again for listening.